Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, August 13th, 2014. Happy birthday, Philly. Episode 10.07, the AFC West preview show. I'll finish up the AFC today as I take a look at the Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs, Oakland Raiders, and San Diego Superchargers. Today, I'll also discuss fans taking cheap shots at players, literally taking shots at players. The Denver Broncos lose Danny Trevathan for 6 to 8 weeks. Cowboys cornerback Orlando Scandrick suspended for PEDs. I'll tell you how that happened. And what the heck are the Cleveland Browns doing at QB? Plus, two fans join me in today on Fans Take as they rep the Kansas City Chiefs and the Oakland Raiders. But before all that, let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Well, that's right. If you heard me say happy birthday, Philly, I was talking about none other my partner in crime for the last 9 years, Jeff Ellis. It's his birthday today. So if you have a chance, shoot him an email and wish him a happy birthday and hope that he is doing well. Happy birthday, bud. We'll see you tonight for some dinner. How about that? Anyways, folks, fantasy football is here. Some people are afraid of me, apparently. But we have managed to fill out almost every team. There are four spots left. So where are those four brave souls that dare challenge me? Bring it! Go out to NFLRNR.com or the NFL Rants and Raves Facebook and Twitter page for links to sign up. Only four teams left to be claimed. Come out and grab them. Drafts start as early as this Sunday, August 17th. So if you've already joined in the league, make sure you go out to ESPN, claim your team so that you know when your draft is. I am looking forward to drafting this weekend. Very excited about that. This past weekend, I saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's right, TMNT for all the cool young people. You know what? I was pleasantly surprised. I went into the movie having zero expectations. I grew up with the Turtles. And if you grew up with the Turtles like I did, you know, you were a little worried. You know, it was Michael Bay and his explosions. And there was a rumor that he had turned the Ninja Turtles into, like, aliens from another planet or something. Fortunately, I can, you know, this is a spoiler alert. So you may want to turn away or stop listening. But he didn't turn them into aliens. It's really good. And like I said, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought the story was good stuff. The Shredder was pretty bad. he was a force to be reckoned with. But the Turtles were fun. It was funny. You know, some cheesy lines. But that's what the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were all about. If you grew up with the Turtles, you will enjoy the film. And like I said, no, Michael Bay did not ruin it. And he did not make an alien. So good stuff there. My only question is, if anybody can tell me, what the hell happened to Megan Fox? All right? I mean, she used to be a fox. She used to be the epitome of hotness. She was just awesome. And instead of being a fox, now she's more like a sheepdog or a shih tzu or something. Okay, she's still pretty. She's still pretty. But she's not the Megan Fox that I fell in love with in the first Transformers. Remember the first Transformers? She was, like, awesome. Not so much awesome anymore. Now she's just kind of like, what in the world have you done to your face and your body? What is going on? Anyways, that's beside the point. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, go check it out. It's fun. Let's get to some football, and we'll start in Oxnard, California, in training camp with the Dallas Cowboys and a joint practice with the Oakland Raiders. So we all know, if you've been watching, you know, Hard Knocks in the Atlanta Falcons and training camp. It's actually got a little bit better, but the Cowboys and the Raiders were practicing. And if you watched Hard Knocks on this past Tuesday, you saw the Falcons, I think, were training with the Tennessee Titans. And like the first play of practice, boom, there was scrapping and fighting and stuff. And finally, head coach Mike Smith kind of tried to put an end to it. It's like saying, look, I really like what Mike Smith said. He said, look, we are here fighting for a job, but that doesn't mean we are here to fight. And I think that's great. You know, I want you to play hard. I want you to fight for your job, but you shouldn't be fighting each other. And that's a problem that they were having. And I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm actually still seeing tweets of the Dallas Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders are back at it again. And they're back at it again. I think like 8 or 9 fights have broken out in the last 2 practices between the Raiders and the Cowboys. Why am I making such a big deal about it? Well, here's the deal. Yesterday, while in Oxnard and the two teams are going at it, there was a little fight. And a spectator, a Raiders fan, who had a replica Raiders helmet with him, you know, it's very close to the field. And so the fight kind of like was right up against that fence. And some Yahoo numbnuts with a helmet decided to swing the replica helmet at Cowboys cornerback B.W. Webb. And, of course, Webb, you know, he retaliated. He turned around and he kind of pushed the dude back. Now the league is kind of investigating, but bottom line is the Cowboys have come out today and they said that they're not going to suspend Webb. He was defending himself. And, yeah, seriously? Who is this fan that he thinks he has the right to police of a football scrum during practice? I wasn't there yesterday. I did see a video of the Raider fan swinging the helmet at Webb. There's no place for that. There's no place for that anywhere, especially if you're a fan. I mean, I understand the players going at it. They're trying to make the teams. They're trying to show that they've got passion for the game. But there's no reason for a fan to jump in there and especially try to hit somebody with a helmet. That's just horrible. And you know what? Regardless of what teams were involved, if a fan takes a swing at a player, that fan, that person should be banned from all NFL activities for life. I'm talking about forever. That's right, forever. That was Squints Pelodorus from Sandlot, by the way. Forever. I mean, you don't – that's just – it's dumb. It's dumb is what it is. And I think what the fans thinking, well, if I get him to swing at me, then maybe I can, you know, I don't know. Just don't try to take shots at football players. That's dumb. It really is. There's no other word for it except that you're just dumb and stupid. Oh, gosh. Well, the injury bug continues to make its way around training camps. This time, it's the Denver Broncos who get hit by the injury bug as Danny Trevathan went down with an injury to his knee. He went and took an MRI on Tuesday, and it appears that fortunately for Trevathan, I say fortunately because it's not season-ending injury. His ACL and MCL are fine. But Trevathan suffered what they're saying was a medial tibial impaction fracture. That's the bone just below his knee, and apparently there's a slight fracture. Trevathan set to miss 6 to 8 weeks for the Denver Broncos. That's a huge blow to that Broncos defense. Trevathan started all 16 games last year. Very, very difficult to replace someone who played every single game for you last year. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Denver Broncos do, but as you hear later in the show as I talk about the Denver Broncos and give you my assessment of that team, I think that defense is going to be fine. And if they can just hold out while Trevathan's out those, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, they should be fine. But we wish Danny the best, and hopefully he can get back to playing football pretty quickly. Now, of course, it seems like I've been talking about this guy almost every week, but it's time to take a look at the Cleveland Browns. What in the world are they doing with the quarterback situation in Cleveland? I have always been a big proponent, and I've always said that if you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. You don't. If you go into a training camp saying, we don't know who our quarterback is, it's either guy A or guy B. They're going to duke it out to see who becomes our quarterback. That means you're not really happy with what you got. So I got guy A. I've got guy B. And guy A is pretty good. But guy B's got this it thing about him. We're just going to let him duke it out. We don't know who our starter is. We're going to find out. We're going to play along and do some preseason games, and then we'll decide. Well, decide now. Because all you're doing by splitting reps between Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel is you're taking away half of the time that one of them should be doing reps with the first string to learn the system. Now, fortunately for Manziel, head coach Mike Pettine said that Manziel's come a long way, that in the first, couple of weeks, he was only doing plays that only, he only had to learn like four or five words plays. But now he's calling plays that are upwards of 15 words. That's a lot. I don't know if you guys know much about how plays are called in the NFL. Look, when you're in peewee football, it's like run one. Seriously, it's that simple. It's run one. That means that you're going to run. Run one is probably the first run to your main running back through the one hole. And that's it. Then there's run three, and there's run five. And then you get into high school football. And then you've got your 110 speed pass, aggressive pass blocks on one or whatever. It's a little bit longer. You're calling out what the play is, and you're calling out what kind of blocking scheme you're going to use. Then you get to college, and it's like 10 words. It's like that same pass is now called X slant, Y double, three post, two Z X block on three. And so there you've got a little bit more assignments for the wide receivers. You've got another kind of mixed blocking scheme, and you've got your snap count. It's a little bit longer. Then you get to the NFL, and those routes now become Zebra Black, Jack Y, X37, Z53, Block 225, Sandbag on eight, on three. And three doesn't even mean that you're going to go hut, hut, hut. It just means that whatever three means for the hut. So that huge single play that was just a quick slant pass in high school has turned into this tremendous terminology of 10 to 15 words in the NFL where the quarterback has to know what all other 10 guys, 11 can count himself, all 11 guys on the field are going to be doing. And it's pretty technical. So Manziel, when he started with the Browns, coming from the offense that he was coming from in A&M, where everything was spread, and he probably only really had one option, and if that option wasn't there, he's going to run because he's Johnny Football. Well, they don't want him to do that anymore. They want him to go through his options. They want him to take a look, make the call, and then you have the first option. If it's not there, look at the second option and the third option. And in the first preseason game, what I saw from Johnny Football is he looked at the first one, maybe even looked at the second option, but then he took off with his legs. And that's just what he knows right now. So he's just starting to get more comfortable. And what Pettine was saying, the head coach of the Browns saying, is that now he's starting to get a little bit more comfortable. And what that's doing is if he's becoming more comfortable with the system, is that's kind of starting to then catch up with Hoyer. And Hoyer, unfortunately to say, even though he says that the Cleveland Browns are his team, he just said that to one of the reporters for ClevelandBrowns.com, saying, to me, this is my team. Until someone else tells me otherwise, it's my team. And I'm like, okay, Brian, I understand that, but you're not doing anything to distance yourself from Johnny Manziel. So it may be your team right now, but you should definitely be looking over your shoulder. If you're not going to get better, then certainly Johnny Football is going to be there to take the spot. And I still believe that the best thing for the Cleveland Browns and the best thing for Johnny Manziel, start Hoyer. Start Hoyer for the first 3 weeks of the season. Go against the Steelers, the Saints, and the Ravens. See how that goes. Maybe you sneak out a win. But if you go 0-3 with Hoyer at the helm there, go into your bye week and then roll Johnny Manziel in and let him go the rest of the season. See how that plays out. But you can't go into the season saying it's Hoyer's team and it's going to be Hoyer's team all season unless he gets hurt. because that's not going to be good. You don't want to start the season 0-6, 0-7, and then say, let's go to Johnny Football. Well, you know what? It's too late. Let the guy learn. If he's good enough, if Brian Hoyer has not distinguished himself and put so much position between himself and Johnny Manziel, then go with Hoyer. Either go with Manziel from the very beginning and just let him ride the whole season, no matter what happens. Go with Manziel the whole season. Or start Hoyer for the first three games, see how it goes, and then go into your bye week and make a change. The thing that you cannot do is you can't start Manziel, start out 0-3, go into your bye, and then go to Hoyer. That you can do. You will ruin Manziel forever. That's not something that you should do. So I think the options for the Cleveland Browns are start Hoyer for the first 3 weeks, tough schedule there, and see how it goes. And then if you need to, make a change at your bye week. Or start Johnny Manziel, and let's just go the whole season with Johnny Manziel and see if he can stay upright for 16 games, playing the style of football that he plays, running the ball around. And that's the shot that you're going to have to take. But you can't go in there saying, Johnny won the team, he is our starter, and then after 4 or 5 weeks, decide to pull the plug and bring in Brian Hoyer. So, interesting dilemma there for the Cleveland Browns. I just don't know what they're doing, still kind of saying 50-50. We're going to split the first-string snaps between Hoyer and Manziel. Don't do that. You're not giving either of them a fair shot by doing that. If you're going to go with Hoyer, give him all the first-string rep snaps. You know, if you're going to go with Manziel, give it to him. But don't do this 50-50 nonsense, because you're not going to have an offense that's going to be have any sort of continuity when you're in the middle of a game. It's a preseason game. Some of the guys are still learning, and half the time they've got Manziel calling signals one way, and then you've got Hoyer calling another way. No one wins. And that's the situation that the Cleveland Browns are doing, and that's why I say, what the heck are they doing with quarterback? Make a decision. Have some cojones. Make a decision. Be there and just do it. So there you go, Cleveland Browns. That is my two cents. Now, finally, let's talk about Orlando Scandrick, who gets a suspension for PEDs. Oh, gosh. Cornerback Orlando Scandrick of the Dallas Cowboys, as if the Dallas Cowboy defense needed any more problems or any more injuries, has been suspended for the first four games of the NFL season. It's a violation of the performance-enhancing drug policy, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. He says that Orlando Scandrick took Molly, whatever the heck that is. Apparently, it's the street name for MDMA, which is laced with an amphetamine. And that is what triggered the violation for PED, performance-enhancing drug. So, Molly, I guess it is. I saw that Jay Glazer said that he spoke with Scandrick, and he said Scandrick told him he took something while he was in Mexico. Seriously, I'm in Mexico. What you got for me? Let me try. You see, well, what happened was I was in Mexico, and someone said, you should try this pill. It's going to be good for you. And it don't give me any of that. I was in Mexico. I didn't know what I was putting in my body. You, as a professional athlete, have to be accountable for what you put in your body. It's nobody's fault but your own. Now, fortunately, Orlando Scandrick is taking the next man. He is owning up to it. He's saying, I made a mistake. I took something that I shouldn't have taken. And there you go. So he's going to, you know, take his four-game suspension. The only problem is, you know, Brandon Carr has been out of a training camp for the Dallas Cowboys. He just got there this week. Unfortunate. It's bad news for Carr. He was attending to family matters. His mother passed away, so our condolences go there to Brandon Carr. But he's back with the team, so he's just getting back up to speed. Maurice Claiborne kind of tweaked his knee, so he's kind of been out for a little bit. It's very interesting. The secondary that was supposed to be the strength for the Dallas Cowboys now turning out to a weakness. The Cowboys actually just made a trade with the New England Patriots to try and bring in a third or fourth cornerback there. It's just bad. It's just bad that Orlando Scandrick, who by all intents and purposes was having a superb training camp. Everything coming out of Dallas right now is that Scandrick had been the leader on that defense. He had been very vocal. He had been doing great, doing bump coverage up against Terrence Williams and Dez Bryant, and sometimes even getting up in Dez's face. So it's been very good. But now Scandrick's going to miss the first four games. According to Jason Garrett, he'll be around for the rest of training camp, but then he's got to go. Very interesting there that happened. But at the end of the day, you got to remember what you put in your body, you are accountable for. You have to do it. And so Orlando Scandrick, he's being accountable, although he said he took something to Mexico. He's gonna take the suspension and not gonna appeal it. So there you go. That's all I've got to say about that. Just, dude, do something about your body. I mean, it's your body. You have to decide what it is you do with your body. And if I were in the NFL, before I took any pill of any kind, even if my best friend or my wife gave it to me and says, you need to take this pill, I'm going to examine what is in that pill before I put it in my body. Because you never know. You take a test and boom, you're busted. So that's it. That's all the news right now going on. I'm just checking right now, seeing if anything else has come through while I've been talking away. Nope, that's about it. Except this is this ice bucket challenge. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Basically, there's this ALS kind of like a charity thing that's been going on where celebrities and players and stuff are challenging each other to take this ice bucket challenge. And if you accept the challenge, you like pour a bucket full of ice water all over yourself. And you have 24 hours to do that. Otherwise, you make a donation, you know, in X amount of dollars to the charity. And a lot of these guys are actually, they're still making the donation, but they're still taking the challenge. They're putting the ice bucket over them. And before, as you video it, and after you video it, you put yourself, then you challenge somebody else. So somebody challenged Tony Romo and Dez Bryant, and they kind of did it together. That was pretty cool. Then they challenged the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, one of the most powerful dudes in sports. And you would think that Goodell would probably not do it and just, you know, let the 24 hours pass and then pay whatever donation he was going to make to ALS. Well, he decided to do it. He decided to take the challenge. So if you've ever wanted to pour a bucket of ice water on Commissioner Roger Goodell, just go out to the website, NFLRNR.com. You can see the video of him actually pouring the bucket over him. It's pretty interesting. He squeals like a little girl, though, when the water hits him. That's funny. I hope the commissioner doesn't hear me say that. But he did. He kind of squealed like a little girl when the water hit him. Funny stuff there. So I hope nobody challenges me because I don't like ice cold water. I take hot showers even in the summertime when it's 100 degrees outside. I've never been a big fan of cold water. So don't challenge me. But if you do, I hope I don't see the video in time. Let's get to the AFC West. Do you remember just a few years ago where whenever we talked about the AFC West or the NFC West, we always called them the AFC and the NFC worst? They were just bad teams. It was usually like one team that was pretty good and then all the other teams were bad. The AFC West and the NFC West right now are probably the two best divisions in football right now. The Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs, San Diego Chargers, three teams from the AFC West made the playoffs last year. That's pretty impressive. You know what? All of these teams can be as good or not better than they were last year. So we're going to jump in. I'll start with the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos, who were 13-3 last season, and made it all the way into the Super Bowl. This team's going to be fine. I mean, they're going to be fine. I know I talked earlier about the injury to Danny Trevathan, but this is a defensive unit, remember, that got better from last year. They added to Marcus Ware, T.J. Ward, and Aqib Talib. That secondary is going to be better. And if they can hold strong until Danny comes back, I see no reason why the Denver Broncos can't win 13 or more games again this season. They were 13-3 last year. I see 13, 14 wins again this year. I have a couple questions. I'm on the offense side of the ball. Monte Ball. Is Monte Ball, is he going to be he's the featured running back, I guess? Is he? Can he carry that load? Can he be the guy? Can he? Has he solved the problems that he had with fumbling? Fumbler! Because he was a fumbler! Hopefully, you know, he's got that under control. And then I guess really the only main concern is Peyton Manning staying healthy. If Peyton Manning stays healthy, and he, you can expect another huge season from him. I know he's 38, but if he showed us last year what he could do coming off that injury, I expect him to be even better this year. I think the offense is going to be even better this year because I think the offensive line's a little bit better this year. So that's a team that I don't see anyone in the AFC really challenging them. And if someone does challenge them, it's going to be from within their division, and it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs or the San Diego Chargers. It's going to be very interesting. But receivers are tough. Tight ends are tough. Monte Ball, when you know he holds on to the football, he's a pretty tough little running back. So offensively, they're going to be great. Defensively, remember, defensively, they were really good against the run. They just couldn't stop anybody against the pass. Well, they could, you know, they were like 24th or 25th against the run, so against the pass. I think that gets better with the addition of Aqib Talib and T.J. Ward. Plus, if DeMarcus Ware can be healthy and is, you know, as healthy or healthier than he was in his final season with the Dallas Cowboys, Ware's going to put pressure on all the quarterbacks. So, definitely the Denver Broncos are a team that I think John Elway has said, we have to win right now. And he really thought they were going to get that win at the Super Bowl last year. So right now they're just trying to forget that Super Bowl. It was horrible for them. It was not good for anybody associated with the Denver Broncos. They made some changes. And I think that now that they've got what they believe are all the pieces in place, they should be ready to go. So they were 13-3 last year. Do I see them worse, the same, or better? I actually see them slightly better. I think they'll win 13 games again, maybe even 14. Expect Peyton Manning to put up some crazy numbers like he did last year. And I would, you know, Denver Broncos, certainly target them in your fantasy football leagues wherever you are playing. Let's take a look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Joining me right now on Fans Take is Matthew Phillips. Matthew, you're here to represent the Kansas City Chiefs. How you doing, man?
Very well, thank you, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, doing pretty good. The AFC West, finishing up the AFC here. The Kansas City Chiefs last year went on a tear, 9-0 to start the season. They finished 11-5, and they got upset by the Indianapolis Colts after taking a huge lead in the playoffs. What do you see from them this season?
Well, firstly, Steve, thanks for reminding me about the Colts game. the funny thing is I've actually kept the Colts game on my TiVo just for the first half.
Oh.
Just to remind me what the Chiefs can do, and then the second half can kind of, you know, I won't watch that bit.
You turn it off after a while, right?
I can just turn it off at half time and just pretend everything's okay. But yeah, it was a great game. I wasn't too disappointed. You know, following the Chiefs for 20 years and us mainly being 4-12 every season, we had a brilliant season, no matter how we finished it. And the first half was better than I expected. I thought we'd probably just go to Indianapolis and lose like we always do in the playoffs. But the defense kind of obviously got tired as time went on. And we only really had two proper pass rushers in Harley and Houston, and they were starting to get banged up a bit. So it kind of, I think we've gone as far as we could, but in our first season, I was only expecting 8-8. So
yeah,
I was happy.
Well, you know what? It's I gotta ask. You said you've been a Chiefs fan for 20 years. How does someone from the UK become a Chiefs fan?
Good question. It's a long time ago now. I had two friends at school. One supported the Dolphins. One was a Buffalo fan. And they just happened to bring in an NFL yearbook into school. It had all the pictures of all the different team logos on. I just chose the Arrowhead. And the rest, they say, is history. And we only had NFL for half an hour on every Sunday, just morning highlights, basically.
Right.
And we used to just watch the games from there. We didn't know the scores or anything like that. We just used to watch the game, watch the highlights, and sort of follow the match that way.
Well, that's interesting. Of all the teams, Kansas City Chiefs. Let's talk about this team here. Alex Smith, obviously, will be the quarterback again for the Kansas City Chiefs. And
yep.
I guess my question is, how is that going to play out, especially if Alex Smith doesn't get a new contract?
Yeah, I mean, I spent most of last season sort of defending Alex Smith, and I felt I didn't really need to. And he's probably the most underrated player I've ever known, especially at the quarterback position in the NFL since I've been a fan. You know, he has one of the best completion percentages in the league year on year. And you know, being a Chiefs fan and being used to the likes of Matt Castle, Brody Croyle, Damien Hewitt, you know, you name it. Alex Smith, to me, was like having the closest thing to having an elite quarterback. And you know, his play was outstanding last season. I think he was kind of underrated because we had Jamaal Charles in the team and the defense was playing so well. The fear going to this season is that, you know, will he still be there after this year? But word has it that he will sign a long-term contract sooner rather than later. And we need him to, because Andy Reid has already said that he trusts him more in his offense than any other quarterback he's ever had. So I think he's pretty much key to the team, almost as much as Charles, really.
Well, besides Jamaal Charles, if Alex Smith goes down, you're looking at either Chase Daniel or Tyler Bray. I don't think those guys are going to get it done.
No, we've got sort of Bumblebee Tuna 1 and 2 there, haven't we?
exactly.
Especially Tyler Bray. I mean, he's a bit of a sort of wild card. I was really happy they drafted Aaron Murray, because he's a guy, you know, being a sort of avid college fan as well, he was someone that I really liked in Georgia, and he's won lots of big games. He's won in some big stadiums, intimidating atmospheres. So I was pleased that he was there. And, you know, we managed to pick him up in the fifth round. But I definitely think he's another Alex Smith type guy. You know, he hasn't got a great arm, but he's accurate and is a strong character. And I think if they can get Smith tied up soon, then I think Murray's going to be sort of sitting on the bench holding a clipboard for 2, maybe 3 years. And then, you know, I think he'll eventually be the starter. I think that's the plan. I guess it all just depends whether they extend extend Smith.
Yeah, that's certainly going to be interesting. I think Aaron Murray probably quite possibly finds himself on the – if he doesn't make the active roster and Tyler Bray beats him that third spot, Murray might find himself on the practice squad until the Chiefs have to decide whether they bring him on or not. Certainly interesting. I'll tell you a young guy that I've seen play at the collegiate level, now watching him in the first preseason game, the Anthony Thomas looking good, returning a punt 80 yards for a touchdown in the preseason game. What do you think of him?
I'm the same as you. I watched quite a few Oregon games the last couple of years, and I always really liked him. He's like watching a computer game, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I was at a Rose Bowl game where he played against Wisconsin. He touched the ball 4 times. 3 of them went for touchdowns. His his first 3 carries went for touchdowns of 78, 62, and 45 yards. I was like, just keep giving him the ball. Why would you do anything else? It was amazing, simply amazing.
Yeah, he almost seemed a little bit underused at Oregon a little bit, but I think he's a perfect Andy Reid plaything, really. He always seems to have one of those kind of guys. I mean, he's already got Charles, But you throw in De'Anthony Thomas in there, and you know, not being unfair to Dexter McCluster, but I think he's a much better player than he ever was.
Yeah,
and he can receive the ball in the slot. He's been practicing there. He's been practicing as a running back.
De'Anthony is a rich man's Dexter McCluster. Okay, Dexter McCluster is the poor man's Dexter McCluster, and De'Anthony Thomas is the rich man's Dexter McCluster. There you go. Just real quickly about the offensive line, since we've been focusing kind of on the offense side of the ball for the Chiefs.
Yep.
I think that's the question, right? That's got to be the question mark for the Chiefs. Outside of Eric Fisher, it's kind of questionable whether they're going to hold up this season. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a serious question. I mean, they have an average age of 24 going into this season, which will be the youngest offensive line in the league. But they're certainly talented. It's just whether or not they can do it for 16 games. I think they're going to have their struggles and they're going to have their great games. There's a lot of talent there. And they seem to have hit upon a guard who could be one of the steals of the draft in Zach Fulton from Tennessee.
Yep.
He's already taking first team reps in practice. And the way that the line actually played against San Diego in the penultimate game of last season, when it's pretty much the second team against San Diego going for the playoffs, played really well and really protected Chase Daniel. So I think there is confidence there as well. But I'm a little bit concerned with Eric Fisher. He's very talented, but it's his time now to shine. And I guess we'll probably sink or swim with him this season, depending on how he plays.
All right. Last year, the Kansas City Chiefs defense wasn't ranked very highly. I think they were 24th overall. I'm sorry. Do you think that unit improves, and are they going to have to get better to compete with the Denver Broncos in the West?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Chiefs' defense, you probably couldn't really find a better front seven. I think they're up there with the best, and they showed that particularly in the first 9 games of last season before they started getting some injuries. They didn't really have any depth. That's the only problem last year. This year they do. The only problem is with some great pass rush, and now they've got Dee Ford as well, who's got a, you know, he gets off the line so quickly. The secondary really is the big undoing of the Chiefs, I think, this season. You've got Sean Smith. He's had his problems this off season. You've got and Marcus Cooper, who is very talented, but also was kind of picked on by Peyton Manning and Philip Rivers. So although the pass rush is as good as you're going to get, I still don't think it's going to help the secondary enough. But saying that, they've already talked about this dog front that Andy Reid's going to use with Dee Ford, Tom Mahaley and Justin Houston on the field all at the same time on certain third downs. So the pass rush is going to be excellent.
Yeah, you just say those three names and I'm scared. I don't want to be quarterback, that's for sure.
The only problem is that Peyton Manning and Philip Rivers, they get the ball out so quickly before those guys can even get there, then right. We're kind of going to be in trouble.
Well, Sean Smith and Marcus Cooper and Eric Berry and Abdullah, they're certainly going to have their hands full in the secondary, that's for sure.
Yeah, Berry's an outstanding player. I mean, they talk about him roaming a bit more in the backfield rather than being a linebacker. He's great, and they've got another guy called Abdullah who plays next to him, who's another talented player at free safety. If Peyton Manning gets the ball out like he does, then the pass rush will kind of be nullified at times against the Broncos. But I still think the Chiefs are going to have a decent season. I just don't think they're obviously not anywhere near as good as the Broncos.
Right.
And a pretty tough schedule this season as well.
Yeah, that's true. They will have a second-place schedule, which is going to make it a little bit more difficult. The good thing for the Chiefs is, at least on the defensive side of the ball, if you look at their numbers last year, they were ranked 24th overall, giving up almost 368 yards per game. But they were fifth in scoring defense, only allowing just 19 points per game. So that's pretty impressive. They gave up a lot of yards, but when it came time getting those teams in the red zone, they buckled down and kept them out of the end zone. So, good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it was funny, really. I mean, sorry, Steve. I mean, it was funny, really, because when you're watching the games, it didn't really seem like they were giving up lots of yardage. because of the big plays, because of the sacks and the fumbles and whatnot. It seemed to be that the opposition was always under pressure, but you know, that secondary did give up some big chunks of plays at times, but then people like Sean Smith will do that, but then the next play they'll take it back for six. So it's kind of, you know, it's not easy watching, I can tell you.
All right. Well, before I let you go, got to ask this. We've been asking everyone who comes in on Fans Take. Right now we're talking to Matthew Phillips, representing the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt, last year, 11-5, second place, got in as a wild card. Better, worse, or the same as last year as far as record is concerned?
It probably sounds like I'm going to be negative. I'm going to be sensible. I'm going to say less wins. But I'm looking at sort of 8-8 this season. I think we'd take a step back initially. But I don't actually think long-term that's going to be a bad thing. We've got 12 picks in the draft next year, 2015. And I think we'll take a slight step back, but I think for the good of the long-term future. So I'd probably say 8-8. I mean, obviously it could be 9-7 or 7-9.
Yeah, we've got... One thing I think that's going to help the Chiefs this year is they play teams in their division a little bit earlier than they did last year. Last year, I think in the final 7 weeks, they played the Broncos twice, they played the Chiefs, the Chargers twice, and then they played the Raiders. So they played five of their final seven games against their divisional foes. I just think that was pretty crazy. So I think they played Denver in week two and San Diego in week seven, coming out of their bye week. So
we also had to contend against the once we went 9-0, then Jeff Ellis put the Ellis curse on the Chiefs as well by predicting that they're going to lose five games. So you know
I can't let you throw Jeff under the bus. He's not here to defend himself. Actually, I was the one who said they wouldn't win. They would lose five of their last seven games. I was the one who did that. So I apologize. Okay. I apologize. I saw them. They were 9-0, and I was like, look, they're going to finish 11-5. Just trust me. And people were like, you're crazy, Stephen. Look at them. They're 9-0. And I was just like – and it wound up happening. People were like, ooh, Stephen's like a voodoo doctor or something. So
this is the thing I tried to explain to people, you know, about supporting the Chiefs, is that people would probably think that 8-8 would be – a bad season, but when you're used to losing every single Sunday for years on end,
8-8's pretty good.
It's great.
8-8's fantastic. That's right. If you stop it, if somebody throws you a cracker, you're gonna be like, "That's just fantastic. Give me another one, please."
And if that happens, we'll get to see how it feels for Cowboys fans being 8-8.
Oh, yes, there it goes. It wouldn't be official if there wasn't a Cowboy jab thrown at me. Well, you've been listening to Matthew Phillips. Matt, thanks for coming on Fans Take. We appreciate it. And this year, as Chief News comes on, we hope you'll come back on.
Thank you, Steve. Go Chief.
So there you have it. That was Matthew Phillips. Thanks to Matt there for coming on and representing the Kansas City Chiefs and Fans Take. Interesting. 11-5. He was, he thinks they'll come back a little bit. I think they'll come back a little bit too. I think they had a very fortunate soft schedule earlier last year, and they ended up 11-5. I think 10-6 or 9-7 is pretty reasonable, and I think they may sneak into the playoffs again as a wild card. But that's just my take. Although the Kansas City Chiefs, if Andy Reid gets that football team believing in themselves, and they can sort of kind of maybe Alex Smith has a chip on his shoulder so much that he just wants to knock that chip off so bad that some of the additions of these kids, I ain't no joke there. De'Anthony Thomas, I like that kid a lot. I loved him in Oregon, and I think it was a steal in the draft for the Kansas City Chiefs to get this kid. I think he is going to be really, really good. So now continuing on in Fans Take, it's time to look at the Oakland Raiders. All right, joining me right now is probably the only sane Oakland Raiders fan I've ever met, Matt Benson. What's up, buddy?
How's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good. So is that true, you're the only sane Oakland Raiders fan?
I think that is the truth. no tattoos, nothing.
You don't wear the makeup and the shoulder pads and stuff?
No, just the jersey and the hat, but only during game time.
I see. And the jersey, is that a jersey of a player that is currently with the Oakland Raiders or not with the Oakland Raiders?
I finally got one to stick for more than a year. I got a McFadden jersey last year for $20, and you know, he re-signed, so I was pretty stoked about that.
And he actually stayed healthy for a little bit.
He did.
All right, so I'm going to run you through the grill. I'm previewing the AFC West. You're the fan coming in on Fans Take here, a new segment that we started this season. And the Fans Take for the Oakland Raiders, you're going to get to represent those Raiders. So here we go. If I'm hard on you, it's because I love you and I don't really much love the Oakland Raiders.
Fair enough.
All right. So Matt Schaub, they bring Matt Schaub in from the Houston Texans as quarterback. How long is Schaub the quarterback for Oakland this year?
I think it depends on the start. I think based on the schedule, we can go 2-2 through the bye, and if that's the case, I think he'll last a few more games. But if we go 1-3, he's getting yanked at the bye and Carr's starting the rest of the season.
You're moving to Carr that quickly? So 1-3 and you move to Carr?
1-3, 4 picks. If not, he's done. He's going to be on a short leash.
Wow. Well, there you go. It won't be a leash like the Houston Texans where he threw – what, 4 pick sixes in 4 consecutive games?
No, not at all. McKenzie's going to cut their losses, and I mean, Carr's been impressing in camp anyway, so I think they'll go to him early if Schaub struggles.
All right, all right. What about the running back situation? I'm just not sold on what the Oakland Raiders are doing. They bring in Maurice Jones-Drew. How is the running back tandem of Darren McFadden and MJD going to do this year?
I actually think it's going to be better. I think Jones-Drew is going to be able to take a lot more of the brunt, and he'll be kind of the every down back, and I think they're going to bring in McFadden for the change of pace. I think the hard thing is McFadden doesn't run between the tackles very well. He needs to get in space. And so I think if Jones-Drew can take those carries away from him, I think it'll be better.
Yeah, but it's you got two, what I believe, are starting backs. I mean, Maurice Jones-Drew had a heck of a career down at Jacksonville. They kind of showed him the door. So do you play them both at the backfield at the same time, or do you just bring in one for a little bit and then bring the other one in?
I think they're going to use a change of pace. I think that Jones-Drew will ultimately get the start just because he's more durable and McFadden can't go more than 4 games without twisting an ankle. but then I think they're going to bring McFadden in late after the Jones-Drew wears the defense down so he can break off a long run.
So McFadden gets hurt, and then you just go with Jones-Drew the whole rest of the year.
Yeah, so that's why I brought him in. McFadden can't play 16 games.
That's true. Well, he hasn't shown that at all, that he could play 16 games.
No, but just like in the preseason game, Jones-Drew's going to wear him down. McFadden's going to come in and bust off a 23-yard run, and we're going to throw an interception.
All right, so who's between the two, who's going to get the most carries?
I think Jones-Drew will get the most carries, but I think McFadden will be the most productive.
Huh. That's interesting. All right. MJD gets most of the work, but most production comes out of Run DMC. Okay, how about wide receivers? Who in the world are the Raiders going to throw the ball to, man? I mean, they got no big names. Can they depend on a Streeter, Jones, Little, and Denarius Moore? Who are these guys?
Well, Little's not even going to make the team.
Okay, there you go.
It's going to be it'll be James Jones, Demarius Moore, Streeter, and Holmes. They're going to be the 4, but I think they're going to use Michael Riviera a ton, the tight end up the gut.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not that sold on your signal caller. Then you look at the wide receivers, and I'm like, ay, caramba. Who am I going to throw the ball
to? See, at least James Jones is a functional wide receiver. He played for the Packers. He knows what it's like.
Yeah, but with the Packers, when he had a couple other guys that the Packers could throw the ball to, you know, he wasn't the go-to guy. Here in Oakland, he's going to be the go-to guy.
But at least if he gets open, he can catch the ball, unlike the rest of the guys in the squad.
That's right. He is not. But you know what? I believe there is something in the water in Oakland that makes receivers become butterfingers. I just think.
Good.
I mean, Randy Moss, heck of a career, goes to Oakland, can't catch anything. And then he goes to New England and catches, like, what, 20 touchdowns in a season?
See, Moss just went there for a vacation. He was just trying to, you know, lower the value of himself before he went to New England.
All right. All right, what about on the defensive side of the ball? They've been looking pretty good. It kept them in a lot of games last year. What are they going to do with rookie Khalil Mack? How are they going to play that guy?
I think they're going to try and play him as much as possible. I think that he's the bright and shining star on that defense. I think there's a lot of veterans on the team that they brought in, Tuck, Woodley. But I really think that they're going to try and get Mack in there as much as they can just to get him experience and have him anchor that defense from moving forward. Everything that I've seen out of camp is that he's a mix between Von Miller and Clay Matthews.
All right.
Well, maybe that's just hopes and dreams.
I like the Von Miller comparison. But not to be a negative Nancy or a Debbie Downer, I don't even know where those names come from, but not to be those ladies, Mack didn't look so good in the first preseason game against the Vikings. Should the Raiders be concerned a little bit?
No, I don't think so. I think it's his first live-action game against a real team, and you never really care about the first game of the preseason. I mean, he was all over that fumble. He didn't get it, but he was right there.
It's just like the Raiders are already making excuses. He didn't get it. He was all over it, but he didn't get it, but he was there. So are you making?
Yeah, at least he's trying.
So you're not making excuses for the big guy. You're complimenting him on trying hard.
Yeah, I think the effort's there. I think the motor's going to be there. Everything that I've read, he's a pretty smart kid, and that once he gets a little bit more comfortable, and they quit giving penalties on third down and get him off the field, I think they're going to be all right.
All right, I am looking at the schedule right now for the Oakland Raiders. It is pretty brutal. First of all, they've drawn the NFC West, which, you know, all four of those teams, Niners, Seahawks, Cardinals, and Rams are going to be playing some good football. They got to play the Broncos twice, the Chargers twice, and the Chiefs twice, all pretty good teams. And then in the other division, it looks like they're going to play the AFC East, so they got Patriots, Dolphins, Jets, and Buffalo Bills on their schedule. Where they kind of get a little cush is they get the Cleveland Browns as one of the teams that they play. And so it looks hard outside of a handful of games. And I think the Houston Texans are the other team that they play in the AFC. Yeah, the Browns and the Texans. It looks pretty brutal. If you ask me, it's looking like a really tough schedule. The Raiders were 4-12, bottom of the division last year. What do you think, better, same, or worse this year?
I think that we'll do better in terms of wins, but I still think that we're going to finish fourth in the division.
Wow. This is some honesty here. Usually during Fans Take, I got people saying, they're going to be great. They're going to, you know, win the division.
We'll see. We're going to beat the Chargers twice. We're going to beat Houston. We'll beat the Jets. So that's four. We beat Cleveland five. We'll beat St. Louis.
I don't know.
Six.
It's at Cleveland. And by then, Manziel's going to be starting.
Yeah, that's all right. He's going to get hit once and he'll have to limp off the field.
Okay. You got four wins there. What else you got?
So I have us beating the Jets. We'll beat the Houston. Miami's a toss-up. We'll beat Cleveland. We're going to beat the Chargers twice. And I say we get Buffalo at the end of the season.
So 6 wins, 6-10. I'm not sure that's going to cut it for Dennis Allen and his crew.
No. They'll get shown the door, but I think that some of the work they've done late will set us up for the future.
All right. All right. I like it. Honesty from Matt Benson. We're here on Fans Take talking about the Oakland Raiders, and it's they're going to be okay for the future. How about that?
Yeah, I like that. I think, you know, all of our contracts aren't locking us in for 15 years. We can dump most of these guys in a year, year and a half.
Do you think, final question before I let you go, do you think the Oakland Raiders play to lose on purpose so that they can get the number one pick and then get one of these stud quarterbacks that comes out of college next year?
No, I don't think so. Because they always ruin their first-round pick anyway, so I'd rather see us one more game.
Well, there you go. Honestly, for Matt, Oakland has – I don't know. I like the Khalil Mack. If Mack can play on defense and be at least a shade of a Von Miller, they will have made a good pick there.
He might be the first-round pick that plays 16 games in the last 10 years.
That says something. I got to say something positive about the Raiders, and we haven't said much. So,
Since Janikowski, he might be the first-round pick to do anything.
He just had a field goal blocked, Seabass. Did you see that in the preseason game against the Vikings? He had a field goal blocked.
He's just working into the snapper. He'll be fine. He needs to drink more before the game. I think that's the problem.
Oh, all right. One positive thing. Say one positive thing about the Oakland Raiders before we go.
They're consistent in their uniforms, always black and silver.
Well, there you go. And they are the traditional kind of stays the same uniform. Very nice. Thanks a lot for joining me, buddy.
Thanks, man.
All right. That was Matt Benson there joining me there for Fans Take and the Oakland Raiders. It's going to be a brutal season. It's going to be brutal season, I think, for the Oakland Raiders. Just look at the schedule. Patriots, Seahawks, Niners, Rams, Cardinals. He's right. They have four. They play four games, and they're going to bye week because they go to London early. They play the Dolphins at Wembley Stadium week four, which is way early, September 28th. And then they get a bye. So not only do they have to travel overseas, and not just overseas. Remember, they're coming from Oakland. That's all the way across the country first, then all the way overseas. It's like a 12-hour trip. Get to London, play the Dolphins. Then they get a bye week. And then how do they get rewarded? They get to host the Chargers and the Cardinals. I know Matt didn't like the Chargers all that much, but it's going to be pretty tough. It's going to be very interesting for the Oakland Raiders. I'm not sure how their offense is going to do. I like the running backs, obviously, McFadden and Jones-Drew. Jones-Drew getting a little bit older there. But it's going to be very interesting to see Oakland play. I'm going to watch a lot of those football games because I think they're going to be fun. I'm still not sure if I will be in London for the Raiders-Dolphins game on September 28th. It's a possibility. But we'll see. It would be kind of interesting to see. I'm actually going to see the Raiders on Tuesday of this week as they are in Oxnard, California to have a dual practice with the Dallas Cowboys training camp there. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm excited to see that. I'm actually going to be looking forward to talking with both the Brits that play for the Oakland Raiders, Jack Crawford and Malik Watson. At least Watson has a legitimate shot of starting for Oakland, and that's going to be pretty cool to see. And I'll get a chance to talk to those fellas while at training camp. Unfortunately, I was not able to make those training camps in the joint practices. As a matter of fact, they just saw Lockenfora tweeted that the Cowboys Raiders have just finished their second practice together and they're done. And there were more fights today, so the fights continue. And I think it's fans like that guy who took a swing at B.W. Webb. They are the ones who give the Oakland Raider fans a bad name. Because Oakland Raider fans are not that bad. Trust me, they're really not. There's just a handful of them. And I think there's a handful of fans, everywhere. But just that the Raiders fans get a bad rap because of the makeup and the shoulder pads and all that nonsense. But anyways, that's it. It's done there. I don't see the Oakland Raiders winning more than six games this season. And mostly the Oakland Raiders have to figure out not only where they're going to play football next year, because they only got a contract through the end of this year at O.co Stadium, but they got to figure out who their quarterback is. Without a quarterback, you're not going to win very many football games. They had their chance. They woofed on Jamarcus Russell. Woofed? They whiffed on Jamarcus Russell. And so they now got to try and find the quarterback. Matt Schaub's not the guy. He's a stopgap. He'll be good for maybe, a little bit here, but he's not going to be their future, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Oakland Raiders fare until they get a new quarterback. Now let's take a look at the San Diego Superchargers. San Diego Superchargers. The time has come. We're going to be number one. Oh, man, those disco days, man. The San Diego Chargers. It was good seeing the San Diego Chargers last week in their first preseason win over the Dallas Cowboys. They got some guys that are beastly on the offensive side of the ball, starting with tight end Ladarius Green. This guy, I think, has taken the torch from Antonio Gates, and Gates has willingly passed the torch. And Ladarius Green is going to have a bust-out season this year. The dude just looks full of promise, and he's going to be the next big tight end that everybody's talking about. So watch him out. Watch him. There's Oliver. He's a running back that just runs the football with authority. I'm talking about authority. He just runs the football. Really good stuff there. Phillip Rivers looks like he's primed to have another great season. He looked really good last year. And, you know, the questions for the San Diego Chargers last year a lot was offensive line and wide receiver. Remember, they had, like, you know, they were pulling guys off parking lots and, like, you know, pumping gas. And like, hey, can you catch football? Come play over here with us. And Phillip Rivers just throwing footballs to guys nobody had heard of. Well, fortunately for him, Malcolm Floyd is back. You know, he had that scary neck injury last year, but he's back. It looks like he's fully healthy. He looks like he's ready to shine and return to the starting lineup. That's one of the questions that the San Diego Chargers were looking to answer. It looks like that's going to be good. And also, like I said, Ladarius Green's going to step up. Ryan Matthews, the running back, looks like he's ready to run, although he did have a fumble against the Dallas Cowboys in that preseason game. He doesn't have many fumbles during the regular season, and he's running really hard north and south right now, so that's going to be interesting to watch. On the defensive side of the ball, you know, they look like they've answered some questions as well. Defensive line couldn't get much pass rush last year, so they've added Dwight Freeney to the mix. Then in the backfield, in the secondary, they added quarterback Brandon Flowers, and their rookie, Jason Verrett. I mean, that was a good pickup. And if those guys pan out defensively, I think the San Diego Chargers are going to be really good. They were 9-7 last year. I think this year they're just about the same, maybe a little better. It is possible, looking at the San Diego Chargers. Remember, the Chargers were third place in the AFC West last year. Well, they have a third-place schedule. So you look at their schedule and you're like, wow, that's pretty good. Now, let's not kid ourselves too much. They still have to play the NFC West. Everybody in the AFC West is playing the NFC West. So that means they're going to play Arizona, they're going to play Seattle, San Francisco, and the St. Louis Rams. So that's four tough games that they're going to have to play. Interconference when they play the NFC, that's tough. But everyone else in that division is playing those teams too. So look for the San Diego Chargers to be 9-7, 10-6, somewhere around there, and make the playoffs again. And if Phillip Rivers, if you're looking for a quarterback late in like the 6th, 7th round, Phillip Rivers is there, you should snag him because he should throw another 35 touchdown passes this season. That's it. That is the entire AFC West. And that wraps up the American Football Conference with all 16 teams there. I'll come back next week, and we'll start with the NFC East. I hope to have some players on the show, someone from the Cowboys and someone from the Philadelphia Eagles, hopefully, will join me. And then we'll finish up the preview shows over the next 2 weeks right in time for the season to begin. And then we'll get our prediction show, and boom, we're ready for the season to start. So thank you very much for listening. I know it was a lot, especially with two fans coming in to rep their teams, but lots of fun. It's always a lot of fun to talk about your fan. When you're a fan, you have a team that you like, you always want to talk about them. It's really good stuff. So I want to thank the two Matts, Matt Phillip and Matt Benson, for coming out and repping the Chiefs and the Chargers. And I just want to leave you all with this. In the entertainment world, we lost an extremely talented guy this week, Robin Williams. So I pay my respects to Robin Williams, a very funny man, did a lot for the world of comedy and did a lot for a lot of people. It's a shame that some colleagues out there had some pretty negative remarks to say about him and how he passed away. And you know what? Suicide's no joke. It's nothing to make fun of. Because it hurts. And obviously, it takes away a loved one. It hurts the loved ones of those people. They don't understand why. And we'll never know why. So you just don't make fun of stuff like that. I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the show. I usually don't try to bring my family into the show, except outside of talking about how my daughters are doing and stuff. But I lost a brother to suicide, and it's tough. It's really heartbreaking. It hurts. Hurts everyone. And I know Alan Brazil, that I've worked with before on TalkSport UK, had some pretty disparaging remarks to say about the passing of Robin Williams. Alan and I will have some words next time I see him and next time I'm invited to be on his show. But anyways, just to say my sympathies go out to the Williams family. As I said, I know from firsthand experience from losing a member of my family that way. It's just not something that you should make fun of. It's not something that anybody should make fun of. But to Robin Williams, may you rest in peace, my friend. Thank you for all the laughs, and I'll leave you with this. Nanu Nanu. I'm Stephen Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.